From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder held a press conference Wednesday to discuss two reports issued by the Justice Department he heads, one absolving the Ferguson police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown last summer of any criminal liability, and the other detailing structural racism in law enforcement in that troubled city. But although those two reports garnered most of the media coverage, there was another report with a much larger scope released Wednesday, which hasn't received quite the same scrutiny. This one, commissioned by the president and charged with looking at the national level, is the subject of our newscast today. Prepared by the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, the 2015 interim report was released Wednesday by the Washington, D.C. Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services. According to a statement from co-chairs Charles Ramsey and Lori Robinson, quote, "The task force was created to strengthen community policing and trust among law enforcement officers and the communities they serve," closed quote. Considering that the nation has been in a state of extraordinary tension between police and communities of color, the report takes a remarkably shallow look at conditions facing these communities on the ground and is based upon an extremely narrow perspective that does not include any members of the actual communities bearing the brunt, in terms of body count, of the disconnect with law enforcement. The task force is composed of three police chiefs, the head of one of the 50 state agencies that train and certify officers, four politically connected nonprofit organizations, and a pair of academics, one a former assistant attorney general under the Clinton and Obama administrations, and the other a social psychologist from Yale Law School. Bruce Dixon, executive editor of BlackAgendaReport.com, published an analysis of the Presidential Task Force's report, which he characterized as fluff. We spoke with him via Skype from Atlanta, Georgia, Thursday. Bruce Dixon, thank you for coming on, and I'd like to talk about this report, and maybe we could start with who some of the players are involved that assembled it.
Okay, yeah. Well, what you got is you've got one, two, three police chiefs. The police chiefs of Tucson, Philly, and DeKalb County, Georgia. DeKalb County is the eastern one-third or one-quarter and the eastern suburbs of Atlanta, majority black. And you've got a representative from the Police Benevolent League. So you've got four cops on this panel. You've got one former assistant attorney general. That'd be Professor Lori Robinson. You've got a social psychologist who's also a longtime Department of Justice consultant. And you've got every state in the union has these agencies that are responsible for training and certifying police officers and police departments. So you've got the representative of one of those from the state of Washington. And then you round that out with the representatives of four different not-for-profits, including Teach for America.
Okay, so...
So what you've got is you've got cops, Justice Department, bureaucrats and consultants, and the favored nonprofit organizations that corporate America likes to work through. So they're the ones who crafted this report for us.
This is the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, which doesn't have anyone from among the police involved, right?
Oh, no, the policed, not
yes,
the police.
Correct.
No, there are no representatives of the policed. Heavens, no.
Okay. So perhaps first we could start with some context. How exactly did they end up impaneling this group of people, and you know, with what charge, basically?
Well, the name of the task force tells you what their charge is. It's the interim report of the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. And as for how they selected this particular thing, you have to look at who the president is and what the milieu that this president came out of. Barack Obama got his start as part of the foundation world, part of the not-for-profit world. And those not-for-profits are funded and engineered by corporations. And, you know, that's where Barack Obama got his start. So it's only natural that he would have a commission that incorporates a lot of cops and a lot of nonprofit organizations funded by corporations and some academic consultants. It's just it's how the game is played.
So in the political context, of course, is the fact that there has been all of this public attention on, to put it generically, the excessive use of force, or the use of excessive force by law enforcement. In other words, shooting and killing a young black man every 28 hours is in the newspaper on and off just about every day now since last summer. And there's a political issue that derives from that, of course. And this is some sort of attempt to either manage the public relations aspect of it or expose some of the underlying facts. It notes that under the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 94, the Attorney General is supposed to acquire data about the use of excessive force by law enforcement and publish an annual summary. But that never happened, and they've sort of mentioned that when they go to this report.
Yeah, they did. That's something that was in the Clinton anti-crime bill, but it was never funded, number one. There were no funds granted the Department of Justice to do this. And also, there's no compulsion, no way to actually compel. I shouldn't say there's no way. There, no way was provided, or no way has ever been sought to cause any police departments to comply with this, because, of course, it would be against the natural interests of police departments to be open and above board about how many people they brutalize and kill. What department wants to tell you that?
Right. I mean, these are basically, we're talking about compiling lists of failings on the part of the police departments. And if they're going to compile their own statistics, they're going to be pretty thin.
Yeah, they're going to have to be, they're going to have to be forced to do that.
Right.
And you're going to have a means of doing it. Now, possible means do exist. One of the commission members, like I said here, is the head of Washington State's Agency for Certifying Police Departments. So it would be natural for those agencies to play a role in making police departments fulfill those kinds of reporting requirements. And those agencies already do exactly that. Those agencies are the pass-through for federal funds that police departments receive, and also for state level funding that police departments receive. So they would be the natural actors in this if anything like that were to go down. But there's all we got from this commission here, from this interim report, like you said, is just a mention of the fact that this was passed 20 years ago and nothing's been done about it.
So, meanwhile, at the heart of the public controversy over each of these incidents really is the lack of an objective party to take the issue before, or each incident before. You have district attorney impaneling, district attorneys impaneling when they do that, a grand jury. And then being asked to investigate the same police that they're in front of the grand jury with on 20 other cases on a daily basis. So there's no objectivity there, which is a major problem, and nobody's addressing it. But also here, the same issue. If you're talking about problems with law enforcement in the communities, why would you not have members of the communities or interested parties involved in the process of fact-finding?
Because in the language of the people who are crafting policy, they only talk to stakeholders. And apparently the only way we get to hold a stake is when they drive it through our hearts, I guess.
Thanks. Okay, so what did they find? What are some of the findings?
Well, this particular thing doesn't, it's not heavy on findings. Now, this is a separate report from the, we don't want to get this mixed up with the findings of the Justice Department about the police departments in Ferguson and that area. That's a separate set of reports.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Where they found a history of systematic discrimination, and black folks stopped more often, incarcerated more often, and all the rest of that. That's a Justice Department report on policing in Ferguson. What this thing did is it doesn't have findings; it has recommendations.
Right.
And it's got recommendations saying that police should wear body cameras. Police should meet with members of the community. And we should use community policing more often. And police departments should institute transparency in their processes. Police should do more training and have more rules about more training. And, it's fluff.
Right.
It's fluff.
I mean,
the name for it that sociologists and social psychologists have is proceduralism. And one of the panel members, Professor Tracy Mearns, is like the queen of proceduralism. And she defines it, and other people define it, as basically saying that there's nothing wrong with what police do. We're not going to question the class role of police, the role of police as the sharp enforcement end of neoliberal class society. We're not going to question that. All we're going to say is that if you have a little more affirmative action, if you have a little bit better training and a little bit more transparency, then everything will be all right. All we've got to do is tweak a few things, change a few rules. But we're not going to question the nature of society and the nature of inequality and why police are enforcing this vastly unequal and unfair social order.
And so, looking at the actual practices, I mean, there's something in this. First of all, I have to comment on the section from the co-chairs. It says the task force was created to strengthen community policing and trust among law enforcement officers and the communities they serve, especially in light of recent events around the country that have underscored the need of blah 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 that shows that there's a problem, basically. And they said they found engaging with law enforcement officials, technical advisors, youth and community leaders, and non-governmental organizations would be enlightening and rewarding. And so I'm wondering, first of all, I mean, I understand the difference between the report that was released yesterday that details the sins of the Ferguson justice system and this one, which is more like a PH report as opposed to a specific crop report, which is what the Ferguson one was. This is more contextual. But you would think that you would want broader participation in something that was going to be sort of a macro analysis, or at least a macro sketch of the system. And the fundamental question you just raised is not addressed. Why do you think that is?
Because this is neoliberal capitalism, and that's just not how we roll here. That's just not how we roll here. I remember a few years back in Georgia when the president and governor came into office, and he launched a criminal justice reform initiative, he called it. And I was there in the room with some other folks, and when he announced the panel, they were all DAs and cops. And one representative of the bar that defended, and one representative of the defense bar, and a few prison contractors. And they called these people stakeholders. And I remember asking them after the meeting, said, look, I'm the parent of a formerly incarcerated person. Why am I not a stakeholder? And they said, oh, that's a thought. But that's all it'll ever be with these people, is a thought, a passing thought. You're not a stakeholder. They're the stakeholders. It's their party and their process, not yours.
So if the concept, which it clearly is, but if the concept of policing that is held by the policymakers is that its function is as a social control to maintain the existing order, and if the existing order is inherently unequal, which it clearly is by just about every objective standard, if they're going into this with their eyes open on these scores, what specifically are they hoping to get from, you know, from these kinds of exercises, like generating this report?
Well, one of the things they get, well, I mean, all of us who've lived long enough have seen 1,000 of these blue ribbon commissions. They used to call them blue ribbon commissions.
Yeah.
Okay, the mayor appoints a blue ribbon commission to look into this, or another commission to look into that. And what the commission does is it has a couple of public meetings, and it issues half a dozen press releases, and there's a half a dozen, you know, news stories about it, and that's what it does. It legitimizes whatever they're already going to do, and it generates press releases. I mean, here we are talking about it, okay? And when the people in the corporate news talk about it, they'll talk about this as though it's actually meaningful. And every sitting president, and for that matter, every sitting mayor, has an echo chamber. They have a lot of people who... let me say it this way. Nobody has ever hurt their career or their business by disagreeing with a sitting president. Nobody.
Right.
So the president's commission issues some recommendations, and Melissa Harris Perry, I bet you this weekend, she's going to be talking about these recommendations as though she's going to puff them up as though there's something that's actually going to happen. And it's actually going to make a big difference in how police behave on your street. So what this does is it sets the agenda for the mouthpieces of officialdom to tell us what the priorities are and tell us what to think.
So, I remember my first memory of a commission, a blue ribbon panel after the Warren Commission was the Kerner Commission. And was that the
sixth? Ah, yeah. Well, we're about the same age then. Yeah.
So, that you're going to have now Republicans, having their criticism of it, Democrats having their either defense of it or criticism of it. None of it or some of it, only some of it will be implemented, if any of it. And then even if it's implemented, I mean, let's look at a couple of the recommendations and what kind of an impact do you think they'd actually have on the conditions that face people in communities with the police, you know, where there's a problem with the police?
I mean, a lot of it is old stuff. It says that you need to make some police officers resident police officers. You need to maybe give them housing in the community at a discount. Now, lots of places have already done that. You need to make them the coaches of basketball leagues. Come on, midnight basketball? That's how old is that stuff? You know? I mean, there is literally nothing new here. There's literally nothing new here. It's a grab bag of old, tried and true recommendations. And it ought to remind us of something that I guess they don't really want to remind us of. The fact that these are all old recommendations warmed over, you know, once again, ought to remind us that so-called liberals are as responsible for the building of the carceral state as conservatives are. You know, that the present Congressional Black Caucus, a lot of them have been in office for 20 years. And 20 years ago, many of them voted for the Clinton anti-crime measures and voted for the war on drugs.
Right.
So, come on now. Whereas the conservative approach is we need, you know, more crackdowns and more of this, the liberal approach is, well, maybe we need more community policing. But in the end, the cop on a bicycle is one radio call away from the SWAT team riding an amphibious tank.
And he's got a gun himself, too, so...
He definitely does. You don't want to knock him off that bicycle.
And as a matter of fact, if he were to shoot
at least while he's on the bicycle, both his hands are on the handlebar.
There's that. Yeah, but actually, in a criminal case, if he were to shoot someone in what most people would consider to be an unjustifiable act, his defense of "well, I was afraid for my life" would be more credible than someone who's in the middle of a tank with a SWAT team. He is objectively more vulnerable to any threat that might exist, even if it doesn't exist. So
I think that might be true, Don.
So the recommendations, the first one, the overarching recommendation, is to fund and create a national crime and justice task force to review and evaluate all components of the criminal justice system to make recommendations on comprehensive reform. And it says, this is not a new idea, and they go back to the Kerner Commission. At the very beginning, they're contextualizing everything.
Yeah, and one could say, well, gee, what's this? What are we?
Well,
so this is, a commission that's going to have more commissions.
Right.
Okay, fine. At the beginning, you said that we got to look at this in context. Well, here's the big context. The big context is that President Obama has only 690 or 680 some days left in office. If he and Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch and the rest of that crew really, really, really meant to roll back mass incarceration, to end the drug war, to curtail the prison state, why did they wait until the last 600 days that they're in office to come up with some recommendations?
Yeah.
It's not even a serious proposition. When you wait until the last 600 days and you've only got recommendations, and even many of your recommendations, you're not even going to back up with any action, and you don't have control of either House of Congress, how seriously can we take this? Really?
Yeah. When he came into office January 20th, 2009, there was a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House, and he had that for those 2 years, 2009 and 2010. And there were no initiatives whatsoever on any of these aspects. When he ran for office, it was known to him and everyone else running that there's a mass incarceration state out there, that there's huge racial disparities in how it gets applied, and that there were ongoing problems with police violence against communities. And there has been no action at all from the White House or from the Congress.
Yeah, so I mean, we've got a black political class and a black president and a black attorney general who really are at best indifferent to the plight of these communities out here. I'm originally from Chicago, and in Chicago, you've got inner city communities where the prison state, the carceral state, has, stamped and stigmatized a whole generation of black youth, so that in many inner city neighborhoods, you've got 70-80% youth unemployment. 70 or 80%. And these young people have just dropped out of the workforce. They've just dropped completely out of the workforce. And this administration has no plans to change any of that. The hopes that people had were—I don't know what to say—they were falsely created and duplicitously engineered, and now we're down to the last 600 days, empty recommendations from an empty commission are going to serve for a few more news cycles, and this is going to be what we get.
Meanwhile, while whichever circus rolls into Washington over the next years, these problems still exist. They have been intensifying. They are clearly intolerable as you're seeing uprising spring up all over the place now. What do you think can be done to try to resolve the problem in a way that would help take the weight off the back of the community right now?
Communities have to be organized, okay? They've got to be organized from the ground up to stand up for their own interests, to articulate their own interests. And that is something that the current black political class is just not going to help us with. They're just not going to help us with. We're in a state of profound disorganization. The churches are not going to help us with this. And the existing political establishment is not going to help us with this. We're going to have to find new ways to organize ourselves. And there are just going to have to be some new forces that come to the fore. Because right now, there's nothing on the horizon. Most of the organized forces in Black America have lost the habit of making independent demands. They just don't do it anymore. They wait for the president to issue a statement, and then they say, well, that's what we want. But that's not going to get us out of this. So we're going to have to see some entirely new models of organization and some entirely new models of activism that don't necessarily depend exclusively on social media either.
You see any rays of hope out there and any existing models that appear to be making some headway?
It's too soon to tell. I mean, there's going to be a social forum is it 2016 or 2015? I think it's 2015. There's going to be a social forum, and there's going to be people coming together in three locations, in San Jose, California, in Jackson, Mississippi, and in Philly. And, that'll be a chance to talk to a lot of hopeful, energetic people around the country and see what some of them are doing. But there's no shining examples I can really point to you right now. I don't know any.
Okay, Bruce Dixon, BlackAgendaReport.com. Thank you very much. Pleasure as usual.
Thank you, Don. No justice, no peace, take it to the streets. Modern day MLK, turn the right cheek. They want to oppress with violence, they protest. We get no rest and come with peace and protest. Everywhere worldwide, they say the brother's good. Let's unite and fight like Muslim Brotherhood. I've seen it on the news out in Cairo. In the streets, setting fires like pyros. Shining like diamonds, 20 carats. Don't get embarrassed, resign like Mubarak. Serious business, you dig, no time for laughing. For the cause, I got my brain bashed in. Put my fist in the air, I'm shouting freedom. Trying to bring democracy to my kingdom. Revolution's the solution for a little peace. And the world set it off in the Middle East. No justice, no peace, take it to the streets. Modern day, MLK, turn the right cheek. They wanna oppress with violence and protest. We get no rest and come with peaceful protest. No justice, no peace, take it to the streets. Modern day, MLK, turn the right cheek. They wanna oppress with violence and protest. We get no rest and come with peaceful protest.
It felt the fireman's hose. I heard screams and moans crying across the globe. In a constant struggle still, when I swing blows. Waiting for a sweet chariot to come swing low. I'm with a million men marching. My party is freedom. Political prison, they tried to kill me like Maria. Demanded I'm silenced because when that bitch speaks, I expose the devil like I work for WikiLeaks. Info, the rebel to revolt. Got the unions to unify. The underground nation now galvanized. People ask why such aim is every. I reply why the cops killed Daryl Henry. Same way that they killed Sean Bell. What the hell are we supposed to do when it's black against blue, rich against poor, them against us? Won't be no peace till we see justice.
No justice, no peace, take it to the streets. Modern day MLK, turn the right cheek. They wanna oppress with violence, they protest. We get no rest and come with peaceful protest. No justice, no peace.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.